sincere hopes that Senator George is back soon. He is quite ill. The agenda says discussion of subcommittee process. So,
all right.
Robin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Robin Lamont with the Legislative Fiscal Office. First of all, a few just sort of overview kinds of things. We have been advised that the folks have done a lot of work with the audio system in the building, and as a result, the microphones are a lot more sensitive than they used to be. I tell you that as a caution, so if you're going to lean over and tell me something, be careful. Or if you're going to lean over and tell each other something, be careful. The mics tend to pick up things, and you may have things on the record that you don't want. As you know from the subcommittee or from the full committee meeting this morning, we don't currently have ways and means rules. As I understand it, there was a temporary rule suspension to allow bills to be assigned to the committees. However, they cannot be worked. So
the clarification, Robin, was that they can be worked, they can't be passed out.
Right. By worked, I meant that
we would
have a work session. We aren't able to have, yes, we will have the bills, we will do the overviews, we can have discussions about what the desire is in terms of actions to be taken, but we can't take any action and pass the bill out until the full Ways and Means Committee rules are adopted. And then another very important thing, apparently the Assembly will pay for coffee in the subcommittees if the subcommittee specifically requests it. So if the subcommittee wants daily coffee, you need to let me know.
Do we do that as a subcommittee? I don't drink much coffee, so I'm not. I drink tea. I'm no help, but it's...
I'm not a coffee drinker.
You're not either,
no.
Huh? Okay.
If you drink the coffee they provide, you become less of a coffee drinker.
Okay. It's terrible. It doesn't sound like there's
anything. Sounds like
that's... I'll bring my own.
Okay. The consensus is no.
I hope you're not a big coffee drinker.
No. I'll get by.
All right. What I'm going to do in here today is just a high-level overview of the budgets and the process that we're going to use in the subcommittees just to orient you to what's going on. First, the co-chair's direction to the subcommittees. If you wanted to take a look at it, it looks like this. The budget target strategy is based on an assumption of 10% revenue growth. And that there will be a 3% ending balance. That is a significantly larger ending balance than we have had recently. The subcommittee is to build prioritized add-back lists and to eliminate inflation adjustments and freeze salaries. We will be reviewing personnel issues, including vacancies, and assume that they will all be subject to the hiring freeze. That we will assume that all vacancies subject to the hiring freeze are eliminated unless the agency justifies the need to continue it, and we'll review other vacancies not subject to the hiring freeze. We are also going to assume freezing the number of FTE in positions and review the establishment of any new positions with the goal of no new positions. And finally, there's a direction that the subcommittee review the management staff ratios by program and require agency explanation and justification. Agencies are being asked to do a prioritized list of programs. The subcommittee will be asked to review those priorities and to develop a list of prioritized add-backs. And the subcommittee will be reviewing performance measures and we'll be doing any available comparison of state-to-state similar types of programs. I'll caution right now that that's usually very, very difficult to do because no states define things the same way. But where information is available, we will be doing that comparison. We're going to be reviewing the target levels based on the March and May forecast with the goal of maintaining the 3% ending balance. And then The co-chairs are looking to establish a process for dealing with post-signing die forecast changes, including an interim budget review committee.
Representative Smith.
Chair Dukes, a couple questions, Robin.
Mm-hmm.
The 3% ending forecasted ending balance, is that an issue that the e-board is able to access the ending balance and use it for needs, or is that strictly in the event we need to come back?
Unless funds are specifically appropriated to the emergency board, they are not available for use. So the purpose of having that ending balance would be if we had another problem like this biennium where you would have to come back into session to use those funds.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I guess I have just two more questions on this. The next question is on the prioritized programs. Are they going to be asked, the departments, the agencies, to prioritize them 1 through 10 or high to low with mediums? How are they going to prioritize?
The instructions were high to low.
Okay. One last question. On the hiring freeze, and perhaps I'm throwing a lot out first morning, what was considered essential? I was new to town a week or so ago, and I looked in the Salem Statesman's Journal, and there is a whole ton of state positions being advertised, and a lot of them were administrative assistants to the manager of something.
That is probably a question you're probably going to need to ask each agency as they come in, because the nature of what's essential would vary based on the program that you're looking at. But generally speaking, it's something that's necessary to, you know, maintain a program or a service or some other requirement. But it would vary by the program. I think state police obviously would have one type of essential service. Transportation might have something else.
Other funded and federally funded positions were not subject to the hiring freeze.
So I think what you two are telling me is ask it agency by agency
right. For
clarification.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
It might be good, though, to review at some point what the heck the hiring freeze does.
Yeah.
I mean, just who it covers and who it doesn't cover and what the exceptions are and all of that.
You will get into that when we go through the list of vacant positions, because the agencies will be telling you what difficulties they're encountering, because the hiring freeze is blanket, except for federal and other funds. The ability to fill those positions is done on a case-by-case basis. So agencies will be telling you what their difficulties are in terms of meeting service requirements because of the hiring freeze.
And we don't have the information by position, which ones were, you know, they appealed for the ability to.
Right.
The agency could tell you that. When they get their vacancy list, if those were deemed to be an essential position and filled, they won't be on the vacancy list anymore. So you just put out a memo to the agency saying this is what the hiring freeze
is. Oh, yes.
Is.
Yes.
Then that might be useful for us to have.
You could get that.
President Hanson, you have a question?
Well, yeah, real basic. The 10% revenue growth, the assumption of the 3% forecast ending balance, all that only applies to general fund?
Yes, in terms of that, but the co-chairs are also wanting other and federal funded agencies to be held to the same level of scrutiny and control that general fund agencies are held to. So when we're talking about growth and that kind of thing, we will be looking at other fund agencies and reducing positions and inflation and other adjustments in the same way that we do with general fund agencies. Again, that's different from what we have traditionally done in the past. We traditionally have looked at the revenues available for other and federal fund agencies and establish the limitations based on that information, but this time we're going to hold those agencies to the same level of budget growth that general fund agencies are being held to.
It's my understanding, too, that the subcommittees, you know, the agency makes the case to the subcommittee in in those cases, in other funded, federally funded areas, that it's up to you whether to allow it or not. But they have to make that case to you.
It would seem, for example, in transportation, where you've got a completely different set of...
That's correct.
That, you know, we might come up with a 6% revenue growth or 14 or something. It just...
Right, because what happens in the other funded, mostly the other funded, is that it just goes back into their ending balance and just sits there and doesn't get put to use. So like in the case of transportation, rather than being able to use it on construction projects, it would just sit there unless you directed it to that purpose. Right. You can have that ability.
Representative Krieger.
Any question?
Andrew, no? Senator Morris?
The 10% revenue growth projection and the 3% ending balance essentially just carries 5,100 forward with no adjustments, even if tomorrow is successful. I don't know whether that's dawned on anybody yet, but those monies essentially that will be raised in 5,100 will be absorbed in that 3% ending balance. So our job is to get it done.
You're absolutely correct. What we will be looking at in here primarily, at least for general fund agencies, are reductions or holding those agencies pretty flat compared to their final legislatively approved budget, which is the budget with all the reductions that have occurred this biennium.
Okay.
All right, moving on. In front of you, I gave you a copy of what we sent out to agencies, which is called the Format for Presentation to Subcommittees. It looks like this. It's multi-page. I just wanted you to be aware of what the agencies are being instructed to do and what the process that we will follow. LFO will do a brief orientation and background, introducing the agency, the resources, the issues, whether there were interim audits, whether there were studies, and make sure that the subcommittee has the context in which the budget is going to be heard. Following that, the agency will do a high-level overview, discussing the agency's missions and goals and its programs and its performance measures and benchmarks and organizational structure and steps taken to control cost, information technology system, budget-related legislation, affirmative action report, and any other relevant information. Then, following that, the DAS analyst will give a high-level overview of the governor's proposed budget for the agency. Then we will move into a detailed discussion of the budget units. This is the level at which the decision-making occurs, generally. And, again, there will be an overview of what the budget unit or program is, an explanation of service delivery, performance measures, program growth, all of the other issues that the subcommittee needs to understand in order to be able to move into the work session. And then when we get into the work session, the burden pretty much shifts back to the Legislative Fiscal Office. And then we will be discussing essential packages, policy packages, reductions, enhancements, and LFO will be responsible for making sure that you understand the decisions that the subcommittee needs to make, and then we will move through and make the decisions based on those options. If there are any questions about that, I'd be glad to answer it.
Representative Smith. I give you a question for me.
Thank you, Chair Dukes. Robin, one of the frustrations I had last session was the agencies would come in and present their program, and I had no way of comparing it to anything. And so they would say, this is what this costs. What would be your recommendation to us to help us measure what they're saying against some type of baseline, some type of average? I guess, you know, this is our first meeting, so maybe this is a time to have this type of dialogue. But so often with the information that we're presented, it was, okay, so what? That's how I felt about it, and maybe I'm the only one. But, you know, if we're looking at transportation, how does our licensing compare with the state of Washington? What innovative things have they done that we could be doing? How do we get that type of information? Is it possible?
Well, some of that should be covered when they talk about their performance measures and the efforts they've taken to control costs. I mean, those are like two key areas that, you know, you should be looking at and listening to what they have to say. It is extremely difficult to get comparative data. I don't know. Susie maybe could get whether or not it's cheaper to buy aggregate whatever in Washington than Oregon. But if the place where you're buying it is Oregon, that information doesn't really help. I think what you really need to be looking at is whether or not they have processes in place that enable them to be making the best choices at the time they purchase something or they come up with a new programmer. So again, it gets back to making sure that the agency has given you information to show you that they have been very conscious of how they are spending their dollars.
Even on a program-by-program basis, a program in Oregon may contain elements that aren't the same as they are in Washington or Idaho or wherever. So you can get a general idea, but you can't really get to it. You really have to listen to how they do their work.
The overriding theme I had last session, and all I did was Ways and Means work, was I kept thinking to myself, so what? Okay, you're telling me this, but so what? As a manager of a company, you want to know how is that useful to you? And I guess it just comes with experience, and you just keep asking.
Well, it comes with asking, and it's very important that the committee be asking the questions. I mean, if somebody says something to you and you don't understand why that's relevant, I think that, you know, you need to say, wait a minute, I don't understand why it costs that much. What have you done to control that cost? Have you, you know, looked into, you know, alternate sources of material or alternate sources of information or, you know, because when something comes up that is not, that isn't clear to you, they need to be able to explain it, and by and large they can. And if they can't, then that's an issue maybe that we're going to need to look at in the interim.
Or why it's important.
Yeah.
Why do you need this in the process?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it's just one last quick comment. Sure, dudes. Yeah, the one frustration I have is I felt like I could always come to you folks and get an answer of why does this matter? But over and over, I just kept listening in.
Right, and that's, I should point out, if something comes to you when you're a committee, obviously ask the question of the agency, but if it occurs to you later, call us, come see us. We're always happy to help or find somebody who can help.
Awesome.
Or, you know, that's our job, is to help you make the right decisions for each of the agencies. So come see us.
We all need all the help we could get.
Well, and that's a perfect segue into the next handout. Okay.
Senator Morris.
Okay.
Thank you. Just a general observation. How in the world do we get agencies to think in terms of not spending their budget as opposed to spending it? They come before all that, go through this process. It's a hard fought battle to get an approved budget. And then the motivation is to spend that budget. Or if it's not spent, then the next request will be diminished. So the motivation, once that budget is set, the motivation is really to spend it, even though the conditions may change and not justify the expenditure. Or there may be things that could be reinvented along the way, and processes that would make it less expensive. But yet, we hear all this anecdotal evidence, and I suspect most of it's true, that when it comes to the end of the budget period, whether it's state budget, whether it's any public agency, that there's a headlong rush to spend those funds. And I would love to come out of this session to reinvent that process somehow that creates an incentive to constantly, due diligence or high level of diligence on how do we create efficiencies and savings as opposed to spending it once that budget is set.
A couple of things. First of all, you need to make sure that the budget that you approve for each of these agencies is precisely tailored to the work that you are expecting them to do. That is, the job of Ways and Means is to link up the statutory requirements for each agency with the dollars necessary to meet those requirements. So that's, it's not so much encouraging them not to spend late in the ball game as it is making sure that what you give them as limitation or general fund appropriation is appropriate to what you were expecting them to do. The other thing is that for all general fund agencies, general and lottery fund agencies, they've had significant cuts this biennium, so that dynamic probably has not occurred. Most agencies are down, anywhere from, 5 to 10, even more percent. So they will be coming to you saying, we don't have enough in our budget to meet what you're telling us to do to begin with. And I'm not minimizing that concern. There are things you can do if, in fact, you assume that this is how all agencies operate. You could reserve a portion of their budget. We have done that in the past. that creates a lot of interim work, which is fine. But, if you have some concern that agencies are, in fact, getting more limitation than they need or more general fund than they need, those funds can be reserved, or they can be advised that they can come to the e-board for some piece of that limitation. But I would urge that if you do that, you tie it to specific programs so that it's easier to track then whether or not they needed the resources that they're asking for.
I know what you're talking about, Senator. I've had the same concerns. I don't think it's agency-wide, but sometimes a portion of an agency, perhaps they decided to buy computers and they didn't quite get there that biennium, but then there's the rush at the end to go ahead and purchase them because they're not sure they can get the expenditure limitation the next time around or
right.
Some other program. I've tried to come up with some ideas for incentives.
Mm-hmm.
Not to spend at all, because there's no incentive for an agency not to spend all of their budget. Now, I've got some ideas, but I don't know
if any of them are
workable, but I'd be happy to visit with
the legislature itself creates this dynamic sometimes, too, unintentionally. For example, I have an agency that will remain nameless. It's an other fund agency that withheld some critical purchases until they knew for sure whether or not they were going to get the salary adjustment money. So, they had to make sure that they had sufficient funds available to pay their staff. And once that decision was made and the limitation provided, then they spent a chunk of money, like in the third or, fourth quarter, on capital outlay purchases that they otherwise would have deferred. So some of it has to do with how the legislature structures how the resources are provided to the agency, too.
We also have some other tools available, and we have the joint audit committee during the interim, and you can suggest that aspects be audited for you know, if you suspect an agency is saving up all their money to be purchased at the end, mm-hmm. that's something we could look at. Mm-hmm. And then,
wouldn't it be interesting to say to all agencies, any of the money that you don't spend, 10% of that can be used in whatever area of your department you deem, you know, as long as you came to the legislature with a proposal for that. I'd just be real curious to see what the heck would happen. From Zenya Krieger.
There was an agency that did that for over 20 years. Maybe even, no, it probably was done before you got here. And it was the agency that I worked for. They, every biennium, the state police years ago turned part of their budget back. It was just as routine as can be. We had old radars, pickups with 100,000 miles. Reindeer, at that time, was made in Japan, like $1.50 a suit rather than the good stuff, and we complained. But that was the most frugal bunch of people from the top to the bottom into the districts. It was a mindset here in Salem, but the superintendent that went to the district captains, I mean, they dealt those things out like it was their own money. And that, of course, that went away as time went on. They didn't have a dedicated funding source and whatnot. But up until 78, 79, somewhere in there, you check, you'll find out they did turn money back every year.
Part of a couple dilemmas on this. One, I've also seen the legislature get incredibly upset because a department didn't spend money on a program that the legislature wanted them to spend money on, and they didn't think it was that great of an idea. We'll save you some money right here by not doing what you thought you told us to do. And that can create a level of heartburn. One effective thing that I saw when I was in Multnomah County, we had some preliminary indications that we were going to go into a pretty rough budget year. And the executive ordered some pretty effective savings, which was setting a goal to every department that I won't, you know, because next budget year is going to be so tough, I need to see a lot bigger ending balances so that the real incentive was to save as much money during this budget year because we knew we were going to need it the next one. Okay. And then also pulled all vacancies that were from like January, pulled all of those in as a general budget resource, rather than department by department. And unfortunately, it caused one agency a lot of grief because they kind of were operating under the budget strategy that they were overspending some contracts and they bailed themselves out by the end of the year with their vacancy savings. And then the vacancy savings all got moved to the general fund. And created some problems for the one department, but it was still a pretty effective way. It sure cut down on we probably generated 4 or 5% of additional savings during that last half of the year that were a real godsend when we were trying to sort out the next year's budget.
So I would urge you, as you're going through each of these budgets, to do your own gut check as to how you feel, how comfortable you feel about how the agencies have described how they manage their budgets, whether or not you feel that additional controls are necessary, and then let's talk about additional controls that you may want. It's going to be an agency-by-agency issue. And as Susie mentioned, there are a variety of tools that are available. Withholding limitation and telling them to come back to the emergency board is one of them. Sending them to the audit committee for some sort of review is another. Budget note instructions are another. Or simply not funding them. So there are a number of options that we have.
My understanding, thank you, is the audit committee is a standing committee of the House.
It's a joint committee.
But do we have?
Yeah.
We have
in the interim.
Whatever it's called, health care and audit or something House committee that is being chaired by Representative Westland. I was referring to the joint interim committee.
Representative Hanson. I had the pleasure to serve on the joint interim audit committee last session, and we do have legislation pending that the committee asked to keep that committee meeting during the interim. But I think we need statutory change before we can do that. But it'll probably give a level of consistency that.
Well,
we got to get faster.
Yeah, I'd like to get moving here because we're going to run out of time. I have a handout for you that tells you the names and phone numbers of all of the staff that's going to be in front of you. On the back is a draft schedule, and I can't emphasize draft enough. These things never hold, and in this case, we have a very, very tight time frame that we are trying to move forward in. So this, you know, the dates are undoubtedly going to change. The order of presentation probably won't change very much because we went through a rather arduous process to make sure that staff aren't scheduled in two morning committees at the same time or other kinds of staff conflicts. So I doubt that the order in which things occur will change very much, but I can almost guarantee the timing will change. And with that, I think let's move into the PowerPoint presentation.
Would you mind getting the light?
No, just turn them off. Okay. I'm going to do an overview of the agencies and budgets that we expect to be heard in this subcommittee. This is a very high-level overview, and I'm going to talk about the budget and the issues that we have identified to date for each of these agencies, but I don't know each of these agencies in depth. So if you have specific questions, note them and be prepared to ask the agencies as they appear in front of you. Next. The subcommittee will consider budgets for 11 agencies. The budgets are Aviation, Bureau of Labor and Industries, Consumer and Business Services, Economic and Community Development Department, the Employment Department, the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center, the Housing and Community Services Department, Public Utility Commission, Real Estate Agency, Department of Transportation, and Department of Veterans Affairs. This subcommittee will also hear an overview from the Lottery Commission and will handle a variety of substantive bills that have fiscal impacts. We will also, as of now anyway, be doing the lottery allocation bill towards the end of the session. Okay. Non-limited other and federal funds are 58% of the budgets that you will hear in this committee. This is an important thing to note because the subcommittee will discuss the use of these funds, but non-limited expenditures are expenditures for which the legislature defines the purpose but sets no dollar limits. Their natures are that they cannot be avoided, stopped, or reduced by agency action. Examples include unemployment insurance payments, workers' compensation payments, economic development revolving loans and repayments, and veterans' home loans and repayments. The subcommittee will establish the limitation for 40% of this, the funds in this subcommittee, and that is the other and federal funds. And lottery and general fund are 2% of the dollars that this subcommittee will deal with. This is just to sort of give you an idea of how much of the lottery and general fund statewide that will be dealt with in this subcommittee. And this subcommittee will be considering 1.62% of the overall general and lottery funds. Most of the general and lottery funds, most of the lottery funds actually, are in the Economic and Community Development Department. The Bureau of Labor and Industries is general fund. The Employment Department is general fund. The fair has both lottery and general fund. Housing has both lottery and general fund. Vets have general fund. And I believe transportation's got both lottery and general fund. Moving on to specific agency budgets. The Oregon Department of Aviation, the legislature created the department in 1999. The department plans for the development of airports, state airways, and aviation industries, operates and maintains 28 state-owned airports, assists communities in obtaining federal support for airport construction, registers pilots, aircraft, and airports, and inspects and licenses private airports and heliports. It's primarily funded with fuel tax and federal fund revenues that... and also receives funds from pilot license and aircraft registration. The issue... we haven't done this dog and pony show before. the issue, there's only really one significant issue, capital construction, primarily due to aging infrastructure. This budget will be in front of you this week. The Economic and Community Development Department has five major program areas. There's the Community Development Fund that, combined with lottery pass-through programs, includes state and federal funds that support community business and port services and economic development programs. Program Services provides overall service delivery and program support. The Tourism Commission that promotes Oregon tourism, the Arts Commission that fosters the arts and cultural development, and the Film and Video Office that develops film and video industry. The budget and policy issues that you will be dealing with in economic and community development are the effect of the 2001-3 reductions on the delivery of services. And then the governor's economic development plans, which we don't have clearly outlined yet, but the legislative fiscal office concern is that his stated intent may not be consistent with how those dollars were allocated and legislated intent in the past. That includes the use of bonding authority for business expansion, retention, and recruitment. There is still $90 million of bonding authority that has not been used. The issuance date is April. That is an issue that folks may need to consider.
Chair Dix, when the bonds are released and the funds come to the state, does the legislature in the future have the ability to modify the use of those dollars?
Not after the bonds have been issued. The bonds are issued for a purpose. I mean, the whole process of, issuing bonds is that the buyers need to understand what those dollars are going to be used for. So once the bonds have been issued, they have to be used for the purpose for which they were issued.
Let me just follow up just so I completely understand. Let's say we did the bonding for the rural infrastructure the last session. Does it spell out the definition of, I'm making this scenario up, does it spell out the definition of infrastructure, or is infrastructure left up to the legislature as to what that means?
Well, with bonds, with the issuance of bonds, there's a two-step process. There is a capital construction and bond. Well, there's actually a three-step process. There is a substantive committee bill that authorizes the use of the bonds. There is a capital construction and bonding bill that commits the state of Oregon to bonding for a variety of projects. And then there is a bill that allocates any debt service and provides limitation for the proceeds from the bonding. So the authorization for the use of the bonds is in a substantive committee.
And we'd have to define it at that point.
Right.
Because once the legislation is passed and the agencies go to sell the bonds, they have to develop a bond prospectus and information. And if it's not clearly defined, they'll define it for the prospective buyers. And then it's stuck at that point.
So it would be impossible, say, for the legislature to modify the definite infrastructure that may say water and sewer to now say we're also going to include a steam line.
Yes, it would be impossible for anything that had been issued. Now, the $90 million in bonding authority that hasn't been used yet, that could be modified. And there is discussion as to whether or not what the governor intends to use those bonds for would require that level of modification. My argument is that if it is substantively different from what the legislature understood the bonds were going to be used for, they ought to seek modification anyway, because the legislature is the one who determines how those dollars should be used.
One last question. So last session, it would have been a fair question for this committee to determine the true need of something like that, because once those bonds are issued, if the demand it doesn't come to fruition, we could be sitting on money that we're paying interest on that isn't utilized.
There have to be projects in the queue for the bonds to be issued.
Okay. Sorry.
One of my questions was how many bonds that we approved last session have not yet been sold?
$90 million out of the 181 total.
Oh, okay. So
I mean, I'm just talking about the
million figure was what we approved last session.
For example,
I know that the channel deepening bonds have not been sold yet because we're not doing Columbia River channel deepening yet.
Right. So that is an exception. I apologize.
I mean, is that part of the 90?
No, it's not part of the 90.
Oh.
That is an exception because the way the bill was written, the bonds wouldn't be issued until all of the approval had gone through in terms of the channel deepening.
I mean, there are sometimes we approve bonds and then something changes and they don't do whatever it is they're going to do, and we come back the next session and then we take another look at it and we approve them. I was just curious how many of the bonds that we approved last session haven't been sold yet.
We can find out.
Okay. But for the Economic Development Department, it is the channel deepening and the ones that are scheduled for April.
Right. The Department of Administrative Services is not going to sell the bonds if the purpose doesn't exist. Okay. And, I mean, didn't get developed.
Right.
So
but for
$90 million is what then? Is that bonds we approved that weren't sold, or
if you recall, I think partially in an effort to avoid debt service in this biennium, there was a schedule that backloaded a big chunk of the bonds authorized by the last legislature to late in this biennium so that the debt service didn't come due until the following biennium. And it's that $90 million that was authorized to be sold in April that is still sitting there.
But we anticipate they will be sold.
Correct. And then the other issue that there is some concern about has to do with the governor's plans for using the lottery funds in the community development fund for economic recovery and long-term stability. And the specific concern is that the statute right now requires the Economic and Community Development Department to focus its efforts on rural and distressed communities. The governor's concern is business expansion, retention, and recruitment, which tends not to be in those areas. The Employment Department has four programs, support the unemployed, including unemployment insurance payments, promote employment and develop the workforce, which includes services to employers and job seekers, the child care program, which provides child care referral and regulation, and the hearings officer panel, which provides administrative hearing services for most state agencies. The budget and policy issues in this agency include federal funding reform proposals, which involves a proposal to transfer funding of unemployment insurance and employment services programs to the states. And the states then would be required to enact tax replacement for the federal taxes. Unemployment insurance tax rate, federal changes to the Workforce Investment Act, and reductions in the child care division, which is a general fund program. Housing and Community Services Department is primarily responsible for providing housing for low-income elderly and disabled Oregonians, including low-interest rate loans, tax credits, and subsidy grants, and administration of the Federal Rent Subsidy Program. It coordinates its own resources with other resources to help solve community problems and provides basic safety net services. This includes services to the homeless, to help them find shelter, affordable housing, and energy cost subsidies, home weatherization programs, and food to the poor. budget and policy issues are housing affordability, the Community Incentive Fund as part of Oregon's Livability Initiative. This is a lottery-funded bond program primarily. The status of reserves held by housing and contract administration for HUD. The governor's budget restores the $6 million special session general fund reduction in emergency housing assistance and housing development and guarantee account programs. The committee's probably going to want to look into whether or not they agree with that restoration. The budget also restores funding for affordable housing. Federal funds are increased because of increases in low-income energy assistance, community development, and other federal programs. The Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, this budget will be in front of you this week, primarily responsible for the Veterans Home Loan Program and Veterans Services, including educational assistance, claims and counseling services, and statewide partnerships. And then the Veterans Home in the Dalles. The primary issue that you will be looking at with this budget has to do with the self-sufficiency of the Veterans Home. The home is a 151-bed facility that provides skilled nursing care and Alzheimer's disease care. The home was only 66% occupied as of late summer 2002. So there are concerns about sustainability. The Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center is responsible for conducting an annual state fair, and it operates the fairgrounds year-round as an exposition center. The issues involving the fair include ongoing issues of attendance and revenue, and then facilities construction and renovation. The fair has had difficulty raising sufficient resources through its fair and exposition events sufficient to maintain its facilities. And the state has invested $20 million to date in lottery-backed bonds for facilities construction and renovation. There's still a remaining gap in what needs to be done. The governor's budget does not propose funding it at this time. Those are issues you'll be talking about. The Oregon Department of Transportation. Susie, you want to do this since it's yours?
My notes.
Okay. The Oregon Department of Transportation is responsible for managing Oregon's transportation system and operates within a program structure primarily consisting of the 11 programs listed on the slide. The highway program includes maintenance, preservation, bridge safety, operations, modernization, highway planning, special programs, emergency relief, and local government programs and services. Organizationally, the highway programs are divided among the five regions shown on that slide. And policy direction is provided by a 5-member transportation commission that's appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. Budget and policy issues include increasing population, reduced buying power, increased popularity of hybrid vehicles, and I presume that has something to do with gas tax revenue. Bridge repair and replacement requirements, sustaining support for intercity passenger rail and bus service, the Oregon Transportation Investment Act, and fee increases versus fuel tax increases.
And I only added that last one because I know there's legislation out there that goes both ways, and the biggest issue in transportation is enough money to address the infrastructure problems for our highways.
Fee bills all make their way down here.
Yes, they do. Fee bills will come down here. Taxes probably will not. That's a good point.
The Public Utilities Commission has 3 programs. The utility program regulates utilities and promotes adequate and safe services for consumers. The Residential Service Protection Fund, which includes the Oregon Telephone Assistance Program, the Telecommunications Devices Access Program, and the Telecommunications Relay Services that link impaired individuals with non-impaired individuals, and then the Policy and Administration Program. Budget and policy issues include growing population and increased demand for services, new telecommunications technologies and services, and demand for telephone bill assistance. And finally, the Department of Consumer and Business Services has 3 major program areas: workplace safety and health, including workers' compensation and OROSHA, finance and insurance regulation, including the insurance division, finance and the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities, and the Building Codes and Consumer Services Division, including Building Codes and OMIP. Central Support Services provide support to these programs, and in addition, you will be walking through the use of funds in the non-limited accounts, which includes support for injured workers and the cost of medical insurance claims. And the major policy issue that you will be dealing with in this budget is a revenue shortfall in the building codes program and a fee bill that would partially restore that reduction. And as Senator Dukes recalls, that was from last session also.
It's still being left to the local jurisdiction, left it to the state to handle the whole thing. Kicks it out to the locals, and we can't make it pay for itself.
And that concludes my presentation. If there are any additional questions, let me know, or if things come to mind after you have left, please give me a call. My number's all over the place. So,
so we can find
you. Yes, I'm easily found.
Senator Morris.
If your notes are in a print form,
that
would be helpful.
All right.
You could make a copy of those.
I will do that.
If you had a little more detail that you were referring to.
Okay, I can make that available to the members.
Thank you.
And that's it. Am I right?
Right. So tomorrow...
Do you want to tell them about the notebook?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
All the agencies will be bringing a notebook with their budgets. You can take them to your office, or you can leave them on the shelf here. Our clerk will, or you can just leave your materials on at the table, and she'll put them away each day.
But if you take them, bring them back.
But if you take them, bring them back, because we don't keep extras. So... you'll be getting lots of paper
right
throughout the session.
Where there's room, we'll go ahead and put the papers in the notebook for you. If it is too big, we will
take care of it.
If it's more than can be accommodated that way, we will set up file folders for each agency so that you have the information when you come back into the room.
Okay.
I will provide you with a weekly agenda on the Thursday preceding that week so that you know what's coming up in the following week, and we'll try to make sure that you have all of the information that you need as far in advance as we can get it.
Now, tomorrow is discussion of aviation?
Yes. No, tomorrow is the Department of Veterans Affairs.
And we don't know for sure what time we're here because we don't know when they got that posted after it was referred.
We already had it posted.
What we were told in full committee this morning was that because we just adopted temporary rules, they couldn't refer anything to subcommittee
until... As soon as that meeting was over, we went and had everything.
Okay, but still so might not quite be by 8:30.
I will let you know when the earliest start time is for the meeting.
Discussion we had about.
Okay.
Yeah, I will call.
1 hour later than whatever your meeting was, I think.
Yeah.
Kind of what we...
So I will call and make sure that you all are personally advised of when the meeting time is tomorrow because of the uncertainty.
Great.
Well, so, is the full committee meeting at 8 o'clock?
Not that I know of.
No.
No. Normally, full committee meets on Fridays, and subcommittees meet Monday through Thursdays. But we had to try to adopt rules, so we met this morning.
Was there a quorum?
Eventually.
We had to go troll for some senators.
Eventually. We got there. All right.
Well, keep in mind, we're here to do whatever we can do to help make this process work. So please do not hesitate to ask the appropriate analyst if you've got any questions about any of the agencies in here, and we will proceed.
With that, we're adjourned.